Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners presented by the U.S. Sentencing Commission. You're listening to a special mini-series on the Guideline Amendments effective November 1st, 2025, and will appear in the 2025 Guidelines Manual. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Ross Thomas cover the forthcoming amendment relating to circuit conflicts. Other episodes in this series cover the amendments relating to supervised release, firearms, drug offenses, and simplification. You can listen to all the episodes in this series on iTunes and Spotify, and be sure to check out our Amendments in Brief Explainer series on our website, which covers these topics as well. Without further ado, here's Lori and Ross.
Okay, Ross, I think we have one more amendment to talk about, and that is circuit conflicts.
It is.
All right. So most years, the commission decides to take a look at circuit conflicts that exist throughout the country. Just tell me generally what a circuit conflict, what does that mean?
Oh, that's a great question. A circuit conflict is when two circuit courts, two or more, come to different conclusions about an area of the law. And circuit courts will reach different conclusions about the meaning of the guidelines. And there is a Supreme Court case called Braxton that provides that generally the Supreme Court who reviews, right, circuit conflicts and other decisions from the appellate courts is generally not going to take up any cases that involve a disagreement or a conflict between the appellate courts about the meaning of the guidelines. And the reason being is that the Sentencing Commission has the authority to change the guidelines. So traditionally, the Sentencing Commission will look at where are the circuit courts disagreeing about the guidelines, and then make a determination of whether or not to take it up. There's a four-factor test. It's articulated in our rules of practice and procedure, but they sort of guide whether or not the commission will attempt to resolve a circuit conflict.
So let's just talk a little bit about why this is important, because practitioners out there working with the guidelines know that, you know, they're looking to the guidelines, but then if their circuit case law establishes a certain rule about application, then they need to follow that rule in their circuit. And that can lead to disparity in how the guidelines are applied across the circuits when these conflicts arise. So the commission takes a look at those circuit conflicts and decides where we can make some changes to increase uniform application of the guidelines. Am I right about that?
Absolutely, because one of the principal purposes of the guidelines are that two otherwise sort of identical individuals are not sentenced differently just because they committed the crime in New Jersey versus Texas.
Exactly. So the commission took up two circuit conflicts this year. One has to do with the robbery guideline at 2B3.1, and the other one has to do with criminal history rules and that single sentence, single versus separate sentence application. So let's start with the robbery guideline. What was going on in the robbery guideline that caused a conflict?
So this was a pretty deep circuit conflict. Almost all the circuits had weighed in. It was pretty much 50-50. And what this circuit conflict had to deal with is that during the course of a robbery, someone points a firearm and says, "Don't move." Has sort of the victim in that scenario been physically restrained?
So there's an increase in the robbery guideline for if a victim is physically restrained. And the definition of that in Chapter 1 provides examples of such as being tied, bound, or locked up. So the discrepancy became, is somebody restrained when they're told not to move at gunpoint absent some type of physical measure? And you're right, it was a 50-50 split. Five circuits said yes, five circuits said no.
Yep.
So this was being applied inconsistently across the country.
It was. So the commission took this up, and there are really kind of two changes that they made to resolve this circuit conflict. The first change is to clarify that the meaning of physically restrain actually requires physical measures, such as, right, the being bound and tied up. So an individual who points a firearm at a victim and says, "Don't move," there is no physical restraint enhancement. The other sort of thing that was really interesting, as I talked about in sort of the prior versions of the amendments, we collect a lot of data, and we found inconsistent application in terms of whether or not that same exact conduct, the sort of pointing the firearm and saying don't move, meant that the person possessed or brandished a firearm, or which would be a 5-level enhancement, or that person otherwise used a firearm, which would be a 6-level enhancement. And what the commission clarified is that although pointing a firearm and saying don't move does not constitute physical restraint, it does constitute the otherwise used SOC, which is found earlier in the guideline. So it would not be a possessed or brandished. It would be the higher enhancement of 6 levels for otherwise used.
So what happened when we started looking into these cases to see how guidelines were being applied, we saw that really there was a 5-point to 8-point swing in, or a 5-level increase versus an 8-level increase for the exact same conduct based on how circuits were applying it around the country. So it really became a bigger issue than just that physical restraint, but also tying in that otherwise used definition.
Absolutely. The 3-point swing, we'll call it a 3-point swing, makes a big deal. And right, especially if you get higher in the table. And you're right, we started this conversation about sentencing uniformity and to resolve the circuit conflict, ensure uniformity. This conduct that was identified as the basis for the split is clarifying. It is a +6 enhancement under B2, but it is not an enhancement under B4.
Right. So hopefully this will clarify, you know, some of those discrepancies in the application of that robbery guideline. So the second circuit conflict that the commission decided to take up this year has to do with whether or not a traffic stop is an intervening arrest for criminal history purposes when we're determining whether a criminal history event is treated as a single sentence or separate sentences. So can you talk to me a little bit about what all that means?
Yeah, that was a mouthful of a lot that's happening. So hopefully I can break it down. But let's start with the basics.
Right.
So in Chapter 4, we've got our criminal history rules, and sentence length generally determines whether or not someone will receive 3 points for that prior sentence, 2 points, 1 point. And right, each individual sentence is not treated as its own sentence for that scoring purposes. Sometimes we combine sentences, right? They are grouped together in a single sentence, and sometimes we treat them distinctly. And how we determine whether or not two different sentences will be treated as one sentence or two sentences has to do with the single or separate sentence rule. So there are two parts to that. The first part is the sentences cannot be separated by an intervening arrest. And if they are not separated by an intervening arrest, they will be treated as a single sentence if they are sentenced on the same date or contained in the same charging information. So the circuit conflict has to do with that first step. What is an intervening arrest?
And when you say intervening arrest, what you mean is the individual was arrested for the first offense before they committed the second offense.
Bingo.
Okay. So how do we decide when there's a traffic stop? How do we decide whether that qualifies as an intervening arrest? That's the question that arose in the circuit split. And I think there were 5 circuits that looked at it. 4 of them said, no, a traffic stop does not constitute an intervening arrest. And 1 circuit looked at it more broadly and did count it as an intervening arrest, again, leading to disparity in how this rule was being applied.
Yes, the 7th Circuit was an outlier. They said a traffic stop constituted an arrest for the intervening arrest rule. The remainder of the circuits said No, right? Traffic stop is not an arrest. So the way the commission resolved this was to say a traffic stop is not an intervening arrest. And they just put that language plain in the guidelines. So if you've got a traffic stop, it's not an intervening arrest.
There you go. That sounds kind of like simplification, right? We clarified this is what this means.
Bingo.
Okay. All right. Anything else on intervening arrest?
I think that's it.
I think so too. All right. Thanks, Ross.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify to stay up to date. If you've got a question for the helpline or want to access any of the resources discussed in this episode, you can find us at ussc.gov. Please be advised that the information provided by Commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the Commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the Commission, court, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.